Hey guys, delighted to have Keith Neumeyer, CEO of First Majestic, one of the big, well-known, almost a banner stock in the silver industry. Keith, thanks for making time out to chat with us today.
Well, it's great to meet you for the first time.
Yeah, indeed. I have actually seen quite a lot of your content on YouTube, and you've been very, very generous in actually helping me understand both the silver market dynamics, its role in the world, and everything else. But a lot of miners and resources here. And the big story, I suppose, is currently, the commodity and the metal itself is doing a little better than the miners. What's happening and when does that change from your best point of view?
You know, yeah, it's a really good question. And I get asked that question all the time. And, you know, I think this is very similar to 2000. And, you know, I've been in the market for a long time. I've been doing executive roles in the mining sector for 35 years. And then I've got this trading blood in me that, is from my background, you know, during the 80s when I was working for the banks in Canada. So, you know, I think I have a pretty good sense of the market. And I really think we need to see a correction in the major markets because the major markets are just sucking so much money. And I in my presentations midday today, I don't have the stats in front of me, but, you know, we had like a $120 million move in Tesla and a $110 million move in NVIDIA all in 1 week.
Yeah.
Right. And the entire silver sector is $27 billion.
Yeah.
A tiny proportion of the market value of some of these tech stocks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all this money is being dragged into these tech stocks. And, you know, I remember back in 2000, I just left First Quantum at the time. I left First Quantum in 2000. And I was kind of just like floundering around for a couple of years. And in March of 2000, the NASDAQ was at 5,000 at the time. And over the next 3 years, it dropped 80%.
Correct.
It went down to like 850 or something like that. And that was the light under the resource sector.
Yes.
Because, you know, you had silver at $5, you had gold at 240. Where'd that money go?
Yeah.
It had to go somewhere. So the money went to the real estate, went into the real assets, gold, silver, mining, miners, and so on and so forth. Now we had a 10-year bull market in the mining sector,
yeah.
You know, which was fantastic for all of us. It ended quickly, unfortunately.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, 2011, exactly. And now we've been in this kind of this kind of bear market, sideway market.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at the GDX and compare it to what it was even 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's quite a lot lower. And we have record gold prices, record silver, you know, silver has only hit $30 three times in our lifetime.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, yeah, and yet the stocks, like our stock is like super cheap. I don't know why, but it's just because there's no money. There's no money coming into the sector.
So one clear possibility, just summarizing what you're saying, is that it's almost a parasitic element, the tech being so strong. It's a fireball oxygen thief. It's just taking a lot of the liquidity and hoovering it up and just keeps giving people what they want. And so it's too much of a momentum-based market. It's too much theme-driven. Everyone talks AI. Everyone is chips, and that's becoming an element. Is part of that also a PR element for mining specifically? They're not getting their message across of what great value is across. It's the Wall Street, the big brokers don't want to talk about it because there's that herding mentality as well. Is there a PR media aspect?
You know, I don't think the mining sector does a great job in promoting itself.
Yeah.
You know, the mining sector is so critical to the world economy.
Yeah.
Yet people ignore it.
Yes.
You know, the governments around the world want us to go green and want us to do all these fantastic things, you know, and create, you know, electric cars and solar panels and, you know, computers and, you know, nuclear plants now, which is kind of new, but nevertheless, you know, without metal, it's not going to happen.
Correct.
Yet at the same time, you know, they're not allowing us to permit mines.
Yeah.
It still takes 20 years to permit a mine.
Yeah.
So you as an investor have to, you've got a long game ahead of you.
Yeah.
Right? You could play the exploration swings and the development swings and construction swings and all that kind of stuff. But it's tough. And so the institutions just have no flavor, I guess, or no motivation to invest in the sector.
Yeah,
because
the story is all about the tech, you know, how much more hours you'll get out of your battery and this one will do that. The tech always seems to take over. It's not, hey, the components of this are required to start in the first place. and it never comes back to the grassroots. It's always about the sizzle.
Yeah, for sure. And look, they need to make money, of course, on a quarterly basis. Mm. And for a miner, we don't look quarterly.
Yeah.
We look multi-year.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just doesn't fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, there's too much of a short-termism and a herding element to appreciate it. But people will say I'm giving the miners an easy time if I don't say, ask a tougher question along the lines of, say, if we look, and it was mentioned in the great event that we're attending, both of us here, some of the miners, dilution has taken place, and actual gold ounces in the ground per share have gone down in many, many instances. Has management in the industry also done themselves a disservice, and are we actually not comparing like for like anymore in their expertise? Some of the people that are frustrated might say, you know, we need to own some of that. What would your comment be?
You know, what's the management team going to do? They're going to shut down?
Yeah.
Because that's their choice.
Yeah.
So okay, we're not going to sell any stock. We're not going to raise any more money.
Called raise.
Yeah. So we're just going to stop the business.
Yeah.
Fire everyone.
Yeah.
Pay minimum rent, and we'll just put our name on the door, and we'll just wait for the market to happen.
Yeah.
And the market will come to us.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, management teams need to, if the project's, you know, it's all obviously warranted and it's a reasonable project and should be financed, then management team has to focus on getting it financed. And unfortunately, you know, the big institutions, the pension funds, the mutual funds that used to be in this market a decade ago aren't there today.
Yeah.
You know, we've got ETFs.
So cost of funding is higher.
It is, and harder to get.
Yeah, and longer,
yeah.
As you've also said, yeah. To get projects off the ground.
Yeah.
Plus inflation elements. I mean, I've asked the question, but I also want to come into your defense. Costs haven't got any cheaper, have they?
No.
Making a hole in the ground doesn't get any cheaper to do. It's a lot of energy expenditure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can blame management teams, but I think that's unfair. You know, it's just where the market is.
Yeah.
You know, and it will change, of course. It always does. But you just kind of question, like, really, you know, where is... there's an interesting interview on Kitco by Frank Giusta and Pierre Lassonde, two months ago.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the lack of investment from the Canadian pension plan.
Yeah.
So the Australian pension plan is required to make a minimum investment in equities within
resources.
Their marketplace, yeah. Right?
Which would
in Canada, there's no law like that.
Mm.
So CVP apparently has like 70% of their money, and it's a big amount. It's like close to $1 trillion, you know, invested worldwide outside of Canada. And there's no obligation for them to buy Canadian publicly listed companies, which is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember a decade ago, CPP owned First Majestic.
Yeah.
And I would have meetings with them on an annual basis. And we had the big pension fund out of British Columbia also a big position. Like, I think they were a 5% owner at one time.
Yeah.
Gone. Yeah. Nowhere close. And they're, I don't know whether it's ESG related, environmental related, mining is a dirty business. I don't get it.
Yeah,
but it's got to change.
Are we at that point that uranium? So we're at Rick Rule's symposium, and he was very much credited with a man who said it's the most hated industry with uranium. Mm-hmm. Are we getting to that point with silver mining that we could get? You know, nobody wants to give you permits. You're the guys ripping up the planet. All the bad PR that probably is not justified. There's a lot of good work going on in raising up local communities and other aspects. Eventually, that PR will get won. But are we at that point? We're close to the being pretty well hated, hard to get funding, hard to do a lot of things, and that there's a chance that any form of flippening could start to open up a little bit of appreciation coming back in on the PE multiples of that.
It's a good question. We need to see that happen, obviously. Really? What's the catalyst to drive that change? I personally think it's just supply.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be price related.
Yeah.
You know, where we're seeing silver moving, you know, copper, you know, I'm a bull on copper as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I think we're going to see, you know, $8 plus copper, you know, $50 plus, you know, silver. And when we start seeing those prices and governments come to the industry, because governments will come to the industry and say, what's going on? Why cannot we do, you know, we're out there, you know, selling this green revolution and you're not supplying us with the metals that we need.
Yeah.
I think that
conversation will be an interesting one.
It is happening to a small degree among some of the smarter politicians that are actually following this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's early stages.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a breaking point at some point where they say, okay, we have to make it easier for the mining sector to get permits. You know, I was watching Phil Baker's presentation today, and then he did an average of how long it takes to permit a mine. 17.9 years from discovery to production. Now, how do you do that? You know, that's ridiculous.
The guy who found that's probably dead by the time it gets around to giving gravy as we have.
Yeah, and all the investors that you have to suck in along the way. And, you know, because investors want payback.
Yeah.
And you can't give them 17-year paybacks.
No.
It's not going to work.
No. I find myself, I remember as a South African, we had De Beers and the central selling organization in diamonds. And I kind of wish that the silver miners sometimes got their heads together and actually released enough silver to cover costs and maybe a very minor return to keep things going, but actually sat on supply and almost forced the supply issue so that we could get pricing moving. I mean, it would be cartelism. It would be some form of monopolization, but so was De Beers' conduct. Would that bring the governments to the table? Would that also see the pricing move? Because you've not really been compensated for the degree of inflation yet, given the costs. Could that ever happen, or are they too fragmented and too competitive amongst each other?
No, it's easy to talk about it, but it's almost impossible to accomplish.
Yeah.
Because what happens is a mine produces a concentrate.
Yeah.
So this concentrate is a pile of black powder.
Yeah.
You know, full of 40, 50 minerals.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the minerals like selenium and, you know, other stuff, you know, I don't want to get too technical, but that the mine never gets paid for.
Yeah.
But the important stuff, the copper, the lead, the zinc, the silver, the gold, you know, that's where the company gets paid.
Yeah.
And yet it takes, you know, 60 to 90 days for that payment to come to the mining company.
Yeah.
And it goes to Asia, you know, gets shipped over to Korea or Japan or China or wherever it gets shipped to. And that metal never shows up in North America.
Right.
Right. It all stays in industry and just gets consumed by Asian industry.
Yeah.
You know, if you're producing a Dory bar like we are producing, then, you know, yeah, we can bring that metal to the market, you know, in a refined form, and we can affect the market. But there's not enough guys like us. Like, we opened our mint, our first mint, which we can talk about, you know, for that exact purpose, to try to, you know, get some of this metal into the retail investors and outside of the banking system, because they're the ones that are actually driving price.
Yes.
It's really not fair for the miners, because we're at the mercy of the banks.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 70s when the whole COMEX system was created, you know, it works well. Like, if you're an executive of a mining company, you know, it's a 5-minute phone call.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I want to sell 100,000 ounces of silver at $30. Boom, you're done. Mm. You get a check in 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, what's better than that?
No.
You know, you don't need a workforce. You don't need a sales force. You know, you don't need to be phoning Tesla or Panasonic or Samsung and, hey, can you buy our metal, please? And then go through this whole sales process and sign 12-month contracts. And, you know, the banks do it all.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they run the pricing system.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the miners have given that up to the banks.
Yeah.
And one of the things I speak of all the time is trying to get some control back.
Yes. And you mentioned in that, and let's bring that in. You're producing, so you're controlling the alpha to omega, the full process on some of your silver, and you're actually producing a bar of your own. Give us a bit of the insight. That, of course, is that part of production does bring you back control
to some degree. Exactly. But unfortunately, it's there's more, you know, producing a Dory bar, which is a bar of metal that contains, you know, mostly silver and gold and other metals, copper, lead, and zinc. But that goes to a refinery,
process,
not a smelter.
Yeah.
So smelters really don't exist in North America,
right?
Because it's a dirty industry and no one wants a smelter in their backyard. Yeah. So, you know, over the last 30, 40 years, all the smelting has gone into Asia.
Wow.
You know, and so all the, it's almost like you can't even transport this stuff on highways. And then a lead con, you have to have a special permit to drive it on a highway in North America.
Wow.
And it's very difficult to get. So what they do is they just put it on a boat and ship it to China.
Wow.
It's the easiest thing to do. And they get paid, you know, as I said, you know, a couple months later. But if you have a Dory bar, which is a relatively pure product, You need the right type of mine, yeah. the right type of rock, or that's leachable with yeah. the right type of chemicals. Right. And then, so it's a unique situation.
What type of percentage purities are you getting on a dory bar? This is all new for me.
So. Yeah, like a dory bar will be 93 to 97% silver, you know, 3 to 5% gold.
Yeah.
And, you know, small amounts of copper, small amounts of lead and zinc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
So but, you know,
it's an investable item then. Really.
It's, you know, we had, it's funny, you know, back in 2017, we had 7 mines operating in Mexico.
Yeah.
And today we have 3. I shut down 4 concentrate mines.
Wow.
Just because the headache.
Yeah.
You know, because no one makes money except the traders.
Yeah.
The guys, you know, buying your con and selling it to the smelters in China. They're the guys that make all the money.
Yeah.
And the mining company, you know, just kind of picks up the scraps.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for the gold and silver, you'd probably lose money. Yeah. So we got out of that business. You know, it's not the end of the world. There are good cons out there that can demand, you know, decent values because of grades.
Yeah.
But a lot of the con is kind of low grade, marginal stuff that, and then smelters, you know, make you, you know, they kind of put you over the, yeah. You know, whatever.
Jump the barrel.
Exactly.
It real hard, yeah, but it's unknown shine. Yeah,
yeah, I get it. So, so for us to be, you know, having 3 producing mines that produce just dory bars is a great place to be.
Yeah, nice. Talk to us about Majestic and how you see 3 to 5 year plans. So if somebody, there is a potential new shareholder out there watching this video right now, or there's our existing ones, best case scenario, we're all bullish here. We think, you know, $30 silver is now the new support level. As a technician, I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel gold has broken out. We needed our God market to move. It has. Silver has now followed. In the cylinder firing order, I think mining is, you know, once silver really gets its boots on, it's going to start following through. But assuming even just at current levels, 3 to 5 years, how do you feel about First Majestic's place and what would you like to see ever happen?
We'll be bigger.
Bigger?
For sure. There's no doubt about that. You know, I built this company through M&A.
Yeah.
And I'm not a geologist or an engineer. I'm a finance guy. I came from the banks. You know, I like to buy stuff.
Yes.
And that's how we built this business. And we, you know, your mines have a limited life.
Yeah.
You know, you have to accept that. You know, you're
so you're not acquiring, you're dying in some senses, really.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you keep your eyes open. And we have a whole team of people in the company that just follow M&A opportunities. And we've got, you know, lots of discussions going on internally about what should we do next and how we build the company. You know, I can't get into too much detail on that, of course, but it's, you know, you're likely going to see some more M&A activity, but just by that, even if nothing happened in the next 2 to 3 years, you know, San Dimas has gone through our biggest mine, San Dimas. It's gone through some challenges over the last 3-4 quarters, just because we're changing from one vein structure to a new vein structure. So that's going to rectify itself over the next couple of quarters. So production will start to increase again. It was producing, you know, at its peak, close to 14 million ounces. Now it's about 12.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think reasonably it could be 14, 15 again.
Great.
But it'll take a couple of years to get there. And then our other mine, which is our second largest mine, you know, this past year it produced just sub of 10 million ounces.
Great.
And this year we're projecting around 9, but I can easily see that over the next couple of years going over 10. Yeah. So, you know, you add that to the Sandia, you're 25, then plus our smaller mine, our smallest mine is at 3. So we're at 28 compared to today, about 21, 22.
Yeah.
So there's growth there just with our current portfolio.
Yeah. Jared Canyon had been a bit of a problem for a while cost-wise. How's the update? Is that going to take a similar trajectory of coming around?
Well, the mill needs investment.
Yeah.
You know, and the winter that hit this part of the world last winter, the winter of 22, was pretty devastating.
Yeah.
You know, you had like minus 30 degrees, you know, for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it was like, and then the mill wasn't properly winterized.
Yeah.
So we need to make a fairly substantial investment in the mill.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen over the next 2 years. But in the meantime, we're actually starting drilling next week.
Yeah.
So it's our first drilling program that we've activated since we closed the mine down. So we're spending $10 million there over the next 6 months. And, you know, our geos are are, you know, they have their views. You know, I'm hoping they're right. Because, you know, we've got 3.7 million ounces of gold that are already defined, but they think there's an elephant there. Oh. So, you know, we'll see. We're dealing with Mother Nature. We're dealing with geological theories. Hopefully my guys are right. And if they are, then combined with a 2-year drilling program starting next week, as I said, plus the reinvestment in the mill, you know, we're looking at a 2-year program of getting that operation up and running again.
And in the sort of 3 to 5 year window, what could be possible? Let's say a bit of a lottery ticket and your geologists are there or thereabouts with what they suspect in terms of production. And
well, you know, you had, it's a, it, it's, we had, our objection was to produce 200,000 ounces of gold.
Yeah.
At Jerritt Canyon.
Yeah.
We're producing 100,000 ounces of gold currently at our other operations, plus about 11 million ounces of silver.
Yeah.
So on an equivalency basis, we're 21 to 23 million ounces of silver equivalent. You know, you add 200,000 ounces of Jerritt Canyon on top of that, you know, you're pushing 50 million silver equivalent ounces.
Yeah.
And that's reasonable. That's like, you know, 2 to 3 years. That could happen.
Yeah, great. That sounds very encouraging. And to be a different place and a bigger place. And will that translate into additional ounces per share? Or do you think the funding is going to keep you at current ratios, or could you even dilute?
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't follow that number. I heard someone else mention that earlier today, actually.
Yeah.
And it's just not a number we track. So it's a good question.
Yeah, but who knows? Okay, awesome. Yeah. And then the macro, something to finish up with. Debt markets seem to be very, very tenuous and collapsing. You're a finance guy, as you highlighted. This is something you'll have some macro commentary on. And our sort of house view is people are expecting bigger cuts than they think, and that it's gold and silver only really go up on cuts. But actually, if the debt markets are collapsing, we could get a disorderly interest rate spike. That could be incredibly good for metals, because people are going to they're going to exit the bond markets. They're going to go, where's safe? And there's good old faithful for multi-millennia standing there in the form of gold and silver ounces. How do you see that side of things? What's your take?
Well, I don't buy the story. Mm. So, you know, I don't think interest rates have any impact on gold or silver prices.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe in that theory.
Yeah.
You know, we've had interest rates go from basically zero
to
5%.
And gold's gone up.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why does all of a sudden people get excited about rates going down?
Exactly.
You know, I don't quite get it. I think it's more just inflation.
Yeah.
You know, it's the cost of living.
Yeah.
You know, related to energy prices, related to salary levels.
Yeah.
You know, real estate levels. It's just, you know, it's a combination of a variety of factors that drive, you know, commodities.
Yeah.
And you know, you need to buy a house, you need to buy copper.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever you're going to buy.
100%.
You know, or you're going to buy a new refrigerator. You know, people, you know, there's a lot of wealth creation going on in the world. And, you know, I was seeing some stats on India earlier today. And the Indian growth is just phenomenal.
Yes.
You know, and people are comparing India to what happened in China from, you know, the early 90s to the, the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
And, you know, that 20-year growth pattern that China went through, India is just starting that.
And they culturally massive gold and silver buyers as
huge
well.
Huge buyers.
Pick up wealth.
Huge buyers. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the number I saw earlier, there was like 70 million ounces of silver imported into India, you know, last year, you know, which is crazy numbers. And, you know, if the wealth generation matches the Chinese wealth generation, you're talking about, you know, 2 billion people, you know, all of a sudden becoming wealthy and buying shit.
Yeah.
That's going to help the miners, I think.
A whole bunch.
Yeah.
That's been excellent. Keith, any final message for people if they wish to engage or get more? How would people contact you or keep up to date with your progress?
Well, I'm on Twitter, you know, Keith_Neumeyer. You know, I don't do a lot there, but, you know, go to info@firstmajestic.com. You know, if you're following First Majestic, I'm also the chairman of a company called First Mining Gold, which is in the most boring permitting stage of a gold mine in Ontario. People might want to look at it, but it's, you know, permitting is always
pretty slow,
a very slow process. But, you know, in the silver space, obviously First Majestic is one of the leaders. And, you know, if your readership ever wants to reach out to us, call us on our line, or just send us an email at info@, and we'll reply.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much for your time and chatting with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, nice to meet you as well.